This is the 10th episode of Talk About and Find Out. Today I'm talking to Alexander Konopiasty, co-founder and managing partner of Flashpoint, a London-based multi-strategy VC firm that runs about $500 million across three separate strategies: venture growth, growth debt, and direct secondaries. Their portfolio includes Guesty, Chess.com, Shazam and Preply. In this interview, we will discuss Flashpoint alongside the playbook that a growth stage fund should be using in this current market. But firstly, how is your day going?
Yes, thanks. Thanks, Sasha. It's going quite well. I mean, we're in the middle of the summer, so things have come down a little bit. Yeah, gearing up post-quarter results for more activity in September. Yeah, quite active still.
Nice. Hopefully that call shouldn't break
How are you?
the relaxing period. I'm well, thanks as well. I'm taking this call in Guangzhou in southeastern China, which is why the background is not the most aesthetic. But yeah, what can you do?
As long as the connection is good and nobody's listening to us, it's all fine.
Yeah, I can only answer one of those questions, and the connection seems to be okay for now. So we'll see. Knock on wood. Before we move on to Flashpoint, let's look to the past a little bit. You left UBS in March 2009, right at the bottom of the financial crisis. Flashpoint didn't launch until 2012. What were you up to in those 3 years?
Yeah, I basically, well, I formally left in 2009, but I had a transition period. So I, and there were a number of transactions that I was, finalizing. So I entirely left more like in 2011.
Okay.
And then basically, I took the time to also start looking around and thinking, what to do sort of next, with my life and my career. And, having been in banking for a while, I think the skill set and the job that you're very well fit for is around private equity because you acquire a skill set of deal making, company analysis, exits, pitching companies, that's where I was like thinking around private equity or some sort of private investing. And then I must admit I ended up in sort of earlier stage investing. I wouldn't call it necessarily venture capital investing, but earlier stages of private capital investing, almost by incident, together with my friend and later partner. I have co-invested and I have invested in a company called Chess.com, which was one of the first deals we've done. And then what I realized is that at the early stages of investing, when the companies have, small revenue amounts like $1, $2 million of revenue, you as a private investor, you can actually try to basically, having become a shareholder, you can make an impact on that company because you can bring your expertise, you can help them raise more capital, do other things, etc. So from that perspective, it's much and not a lot of capital is required. So if you want to raise more money on top of your money, you can be in business, relatively quickly. Unlike private equity, where you need to raise, if you're doing buyouts, where my skill set probably could have been more sort of applicable, you need to raise, significant amounts of capital to be able to run such a strategy. So that's how we ended up, launching Flashpoint back in 2012. So indeed, early stage investing was our original thesis. That has evolved over time.
Okay, so you were drawn by the speed at which you could move, and then also the say that you could have in the companies that you invested in. Is that fair?
Yeah, and I mean, I have been so since early days, since I started at Morgan Stanley in London, I have been focusing on telecom, media, and technology. Obviously, 25 years ago, it was more telecom and media, a lot less technology, especially after the dot-com bubble. So basically, all of that skill, all of that knowledge led to basically understanding that I have expertise in certain sectors, in certain segments, and I understand the business models. I understand who potential buyers are, who is competition, and that's how like that's what naturally led to technology investing in a way. If I was doing oil and gas before, maybe I would not have ended up in technology investing. But because of that, one thing led to another, and that's how basically we ended up, like one of the other reasons why we ended up there.
Cool. So it was sort of an evolution from private banking, rather than like the plan as you left, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. And then the way we've developed as well is that what we realized is that, we essentially we come from financial services in terms of background and skill set, and maybe we don't have such deep expertise and knowledge in certain sectors. Although we have built such expertise over time across industries like fintech, we've done quite a lot. Overall, we have in the last 15 years, we've done about 85, 90 transactions already. We've done about 25, 30 exits. So you can say that we have expertise in certain verticals. As I mentioned, fintech, we like healthcare these days a lot. So we have been trying to focus on some of them to basically be able to deliver even more value add to founders. So that has been developing. But then what we realized is that it's interesting for us to scale Flashpoint as a company, which means that you want to build equity of Flashpoint in a way. And for that to happen, Flashpoint has become a company, and that company started doing additional products. Besides venture, we now have growth debt. We also have a secondaries product. And then the logic there is that basically we like to meet the founder early on, even before we give them money. So we see about maybe like 5,000 companies per year right now. So we
Oh,
like
wow.
developing relationships. Yeah, it's quite a big flow of information and founders and companies where we spend time. The idea is that you try to meet the founder early. You might not give him or her money, but you develop the relationship, you get to know them, and then maybe you try to help them on a pro bono basis or make introductions, introduce them to angels or some other people. And then basically, over time, when they grow into like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 million of revenue, you can start basically deploying capital from the venture side of things. And then, the idea of growth debt came because, on the early stage of investing, we're quite, I would say, focused in terms of what we are looking for. So we have been focused mostly around B2B companies. We've done some B2C in the past, but B2B is something where we spend most of our time. And then we focus on companies that have, product market fit, that are focused on the US, that are generating, sizable revenue. But sometimes there are good companies that come our way where we develop the relationship, but they don't fit the strategy. Or basically, we can't give money to everybody, and there is obviously some competition. There are companies that we liked, we did not give them money, but they succeeded. So that's how the idea of debt came about, whereby you can basically extract synergy from following some of these companies from the funnel, right? Because you've already spent so much time on getting to know the founder, right? So the idea of Flashpoint, our vision is that we like to build relationship with the founder, and then over time, be able to give founder different types of capital as the company grows, to become bigger and bigger and bigger, right? So today we have three of these strategies, but then maybe there could be like more of these strategies. So the founder is in a way our client, and then we want to provide this client different types of capital. And for the founder, what matters is the relationship with Flashpoint, right? So the founder builds also like builds this relationship, and it's a long-term relationship. So we don't want to be stressed out, or we don't want to be pressurized today to give money, on terms that might not work for us, or otherwise. So that's the idea. And then also on the other side, we have clients who are investors. We have close to, let's say, 250 investors on our platform, people who want to allocate capital into these into these segments. And then investors basically have their own preference, what they want. They want risk return profile, they want certain duration, they like certain industries, they allocate to various funds. So having more products, you in a way can capture some of this demand better, right? And then so that's the idea of of the Flashpoint platform and the vision that we have that we're pursuing.
Yeah, I can see that vision with the stack, and I find the sort of having that relationship with the founder being the one constant across all those different products is, I think that's a really important aspect of it. Would you say the stack was always the plan, or do you think it's also developed alongside how the market's developed?
No, it definitely was not the plan. I think basically what we realized is that scaling the early stage investing business takes a lot of time, right? And on some vintages you might perform better, on some vintages you might perform worse, and also there is significant capital concentration. So if you look at the percentage of funds that raise like 80% of money, it's just like handful, it's like 10 funds in the US raised 80% of all capital, right? So there is a huge concentration of capital into certain, and to get to that level, it takes time, it takes, a lot of effort, expertise, and it's very difficult. It's very difficult to raise like a 500 million venture fund or a billion venture fund. There are not that many, right? So you can get up to 100, 200, even if you are doing very well and you're successful, because of longer holding periods, longer illiquidity of the product, right? Some funds, and it just takes companies to grow longer, right? So it takes companies to go from 2, 3 million to like 50 to 100 million of revenue. It takes years. Okay, with AI now, there are some cases where companies are capable to go from 0 to 1 much faster. But in general, the cycle of building a big company is a long cycle. Plus, you have some troubles on the way. We had like, COVID and the interest rate environment and different wars. So a lot of things are happening in the background. So, to scale, our first fund was like 20, third fund was 50, second fund was 50, third fund was like 100. So it took us like many years to scale from 20 to 100, right? So how many, like, and that's how we were thinking, okay, how do you add pace and scalability of the platform as we move along, right? And the only way is to try and like do more products.
Because correct me if I'm wrong, your fourth fund is trying to raise 200 million. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're in the process. I mean, we have basically depending on the institutional demands, we set ourselves a target of 150 to 200, depending on what we see. I mean, it's very challenging market conditions. Basically, all the investors have been allocated like to all up to 2021. So a lot of people basically not having received liquidity are preferring to keep in touch and see like what's happening. So it's definitely going to be a difficult vintage for everybody, at the early stage of investing, including ourselves. But I think we'll get, we're still in the process. We're getting, quite good demand. I think the good, the interesting development is we're seeing more institutional traction because we're in Fund 4, so we have been able to attract a lot more institutional demand into this fund versus Fund 3. So I think that's a big success for us as a Flashpoint platform. We did not have that in Fund 2 or Fund 3, which have been more family office focused funds. So this is great development for us, for sure.
Is that something that you're actively encouraging more institutional investors?
Well, I think in general, the way we see our business is that I think when you start early, you have an opportunity to build some stake in the company. But if the fund size is small, you can only go as far in terms of continuing to add capital to the company. So having more institutional investors in your funds, in your business, allows you to continue supporting company longer with more capital. So, like to give you some examples, like Gesty, for example, where we were one of the early investors in the company, and we have been investing out of a 50 million fund. So you can't put more than like 15% of fund's capital into a company, right? So, although the company has grown and is a unicorn now, et cetera, raised money from KKR, Apax, Michael Dell, Sixth Street, et cetera. But Flashpoint, having been an early investor, was able to put in only like a small fraction of all the capital the company raised, right? So having more institutional capital would have allowed us to build more stake, to have more capital at the table. But because you have more smaller investors and people who do have limits in terms of how much they can invest into like single name or single fund, they're restricted in that. So that in a way limits our ability to grow the business. So having institutional capital is a natural step for evolution of any manager, I think. So starting from like fund three, four, I think people do get start like becoming more and more institutionalized. So I think that's also a way for us. Also in our debt business, which where we had about the 30 million first fund and then about the 70 million second fund, basically there it was also like more family office supported. And we see a lot of interest in the market, a lot of demand on the founder side for this product, for example. So having more capital will allow us to basically capture more opportunity and give more funding to great founders out there.
Yeah, it's really impressive, Flashpoint's growth, and it's a testament to you guys. Kind of building on that with the 150 to 200 that you're raising, how much of that is reserved for new deals, and how much of it will be follow-on capital for companies that you've already have in your portfolio?
Yeah, normally the way we try to allocate capital is about like half of capital roughly plus or minus gets invested to build a portfolio. We are a small fund, on so we try to build a portfolio of 12 to 15 companies maybe, and then essentially out of that we would look to allocate to maybe like a handful of companies the remainder of the fund's capital as the companies perform. Obviously we're investing at early stages of companies' development. We are trying to find companies that are operating in large markets that have first mover advantages that are supported by strong experienced teams. But again, there's like always competition out there. Not scalability requires a lot of effort. And of course, we as any early stage investor, we do get stuck with some companies and trying to, of course, push the conversion ratio higher into success. But then we like to focus capital on companies that would become eventually winners, like Gesty in our second fund, or a company called Mize in our third fund that we sold to. Yanolia, which is a SoftBank-backed, basically investor. So these stories, they do take more of our capital going forward, and that makes us a long-term partner. So we're not an investor who is basically opportunistic or who would be looking for quick wins or quick results. Obviously, everybody wants to see success and traction and performance. But we're a long-term partner. That's how we position ourselves. We're a long-term partner. We're prepared to, be patient through ups and downs and help the founders, help the company. Like in Gesty, for example, we invested in 2016, so we've been there for 10 years. We have sold partially across certain points in the company's growth, but we largely remain. I'm a board member there, and we are trying to be a meaningful shareholder. So for us, again, this underpins our thesis that we are a long-term partner taking a long-term view on the company.
Gotcha. And that's what the product stack allows you to do as well with the follow-on capital.
Exactly. And we have not been cross-investing a lot up until recently across the product. So if we would have given you money from our venture growth fund, we would not normally support you from the debt fund. So we try to like differentiate. Recently, we've implemented certain procedures internally, how we can manage the conflicts of interest and how we can actually cross-invest, because if this is a company we've known for a while, it's grown, et cetera, why not like provide lending to this company? Because we've been there for a while, we know everything. So it just makes a lot of sense. So we started doing that. But again, recently I see good potential in that. With proper conflict management, I think this cross-product investing could work. Definitely this allows us to provide more capital to founders and more value to our investors.
Cool. Let's talk a little bit about the filter, which you kind of mentioned earlier in our conversation. It's quite specific. To be exact, it's B2B SaaS, 1 to 5 million in ARR, doubling year on year, and it's European or Israeli founders building globally. Where does that filter come from?
So basically we are we ourselves are a team of Eastern Europeans, Israeli. So for us, it comes down to sourcing. What's your edge in finding the companies, right? So we think that there are very good technical founders originating from from Europe or Eastern Europe. If you look at broader on a grander scale, including Israel. And a lot of these markets are underserved in terms of capital expertise. Israel maybe stands out a little bit because it's a very large and diversified market. There is a lot of capital. But if you start splitting it into verticals and stages, there are certain stages where it's not as abundant in capital. For example, like the stage where we've sort of found ourselves focusing on, sort of like post-seed stage. It's not yet, a lot of times these companies are not yet on the radar screens of large American investors. And then local investors who are more seed focused, they're not capable to provide the expertise required for the founders to continue scaling. And then we have an office in New York as well, so we're in New York, London, Tel Aviv is like our main axis of operation in a way. And there, basically, we come as an investor who has a deep network of relations, deep network of connections to various later stage investors, strategics, private equities. We have expertise and resources and capability in helping founders to hire people, to have business development opportunities, etc. And in general, if you think about the world, so you're in China, but we don't go that direction. So we live in the bipolar world these days, so we are more moving to the West. Essentially, that's where our in a way skill set and our expertise lies. So we help these founders to drop an anchor and start pushing more actively. We provide them capital to essentially scale their go-to-market strategy, hire more people, invest more in product, and be a long-term partner for them. So that's the idea of Flashpoint thesis. So we're, in that sense, we're different from a lot of investors who are, let's say, more European focused, who might have like also similar depth in sourcing in local markets or like in some European markets, but then their mandate is to support companies that are more like local, more like German, French, Spanish, Italian. So our mandate is slightly different. We're actually trying to find people who are trying to escape from these markets in a way, who are immigrating. So who are not, and this is slightly different thesis, and also the way the sourcing works, how you find these founders is also different because if you are looking for immigrants out of Germany, like you might not be able to find them in Germany. You need to look at like you need to be looking for them in New York already, right? Or you need to have ways of finding these founders. So we do a lot on the sourcing side. We have a network of scouts. We have over 200 scouts across the region. We do a lot of marketing, thought leadership, participate in conferences. We have a network of like angels, early stage investors. So we've built a lot of these sourcing mechanics to allow us to like find these companies and get acquainted to them as early as possible.
Yeah, you mentioned the New York office there, and I think the idea of taking European founders and scaling them in America is really interesting. I worked at Entrepreneurs First, which is doing something very similar. They recently launched a product called The Bridge, for example, where they'll literally take 30, 40 very talented Europeans and put them in a house in San Francisco for a month. And yeah, a lot of them will go on to start companies. Do you think that will remain the sort of direction of flow for a long time?
If you think about like Europe, and then if you include there like former Soviet Union countries, because there are a lot of immigrants out of there, it's like almost like what 600 million people, right? So it's like twice the population of the US, and every year you have millions of students who are graduating, who are capable and who are hungry. So I don't see, and also Europe, I feel like versus US, it's a lot more conservative market. In general, both in terms of policy, in terms of liquidity, in terms of depth of capital, and also it's not a homogeneous market. It's split into like all of these like small markets. It's much harder to build a big company and scale it. So in that sense, if you want to build something big, you either have to go international or you need to go to the US. In my mind, if you're moving to the West, if you're not going to the East, this is the way. So we're trying to find these people, like I don't see how it's gonna stop the flow of these founders. And also, I think the fact that basically American ecosystem as well is quite specific because also it's there are different hubs and silos, and for people to penetrate the network in Silicon Valley or like somewhere else is very complicated, right? If you're a young founder from, let's say, Bulgaria, and you have like your company has like 1 to 2 million of revenue, and you're looking to raise a round of like, I don't know, 5 to 10, it's very challenging, right? Because American investors, they can't like verify who you are because you worked in Bulgaria, you graduated from university there, like you speak English with a heavy accent, etc. So for these people, it's very hard to like really like give you money, right? Having met you just like recently, right? So it requires like building of trust and like long attraction, especially if you raise money only from like Bulgarian angels or like seed funds, right? In the US, it might be challenging. Like people do get traction, people do get people are able to raise, don't get me wrong. Of course, like there are some more successful products and founders who are capable to do that, but in general, it's a challenge. Like at early stages, it's very hard to distinct, to find distinction of like what is going to work or not. People really need to spend a lot of time talking to a lot of investors, and I think that for some of these founders, it's much more challenging. If you are already in the Silicon Valley, or if you're graduated from U.S. universities, worked for U.S. companies, and you're in the network, it's still difficult. Everything like it is difficult to build a company, but it's easier versus coming from the outside.
As a European yourself, do you ever find it maybe a little bit frustrating that the ecosystem isn't good enough here to go as big as you would in America or China?
No, but I think it's a natural sort of like evolution of things, right? Because Europe is not, again, like a one homogeneous market, and people speak so many languages here. So it's naturally much more difficult to scale. I think like one other reason where I think that the US is more advanced is depth of funding available for guys like us, for example. To be able to fundraise capital, take risk, and support some of these companies. Europe in general, like pension funds, banks, endowments, etc., are not that advanced in allocating capital to private manager, private, illiquid capital managers. There are like large government programs that are run by EIF, EBRD, etc., but I can't say that they're like that efficient, to be honest. In the US, it's just the depth of the market is so big. People are prepared to take risks, to lose money. If you look at like VC returns over like decades, they're not as like high. You need to be in the top like quartile or top half to like, only a handful of managers are actually driving that. I mean, we are quite happy about our returns. We've been quite good at keeping on distributing capital to our investors. Every year since like 2016, 17, we're distributing capital to our investors. Despite market conditions, despite like anything, we have a couple of exits cooking right now, quite big ones. So we'll see, how that goes. M&A is always unpredictable. So that allows you to be sort of competitive there. But I think that the US market in that sense, it also takes time to build relationships and to, find your investors and to they like, there a lot of them are super sophisticated, so they like taking time, they like getting to know you, but then they come through in the end.
Yeah, and you sort of position yourself coming back to that Bulgarian startup example as a person who can maybe shorten that time with building those relationships in Silicon Valley.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what our differentiation comes down to our sourcing, because it's different from the European funds and investors, right? Because there are like other European investors, so our sourcing will be different. So that's one of our differentiation factors. And then, you know, we are more international versus a lot of these European funds. So we do have presence in the US, which helps, because if the company migrates to the US, you do need to spend time with them. I think it's very important, because you do need to like spend time with the founders, brainstorm about like things, you know, help them think about strategy, you know, business model, push them to hire earlier, push them to think about product development earlier. Because people are like, being a founder, it's a lonely job. You're like out there by yourself. Like you're like, and then, you know, anxiety comes, and you know you're unsure, you take risks, you know you're under pressure, so it's a very tough job, right? So having somebody on your side who's actually like spending time, who's thoughtful, who is you know dedicated, is very important. Because a lot of times early investors like angels, etc., they're not, it's like they give money and that's it, right? They don't spend time, they're not professional investors. So for us, this is like, this is the job. We'll be spending a lot of time with you as the founder to help you like go through some of these hurdles. For us, it's super important. It's part of the job description, essentially. And so that's, and then the last mode is where, you know, we are, have been like capable to push over and over again, is fundraising and exits, right? So like, you know, we do focus on, we build concentrated portfolios. For us, it's super important that companies succeed. You know, we've invested into like four unicorns eventually. So it's quite important that, you know, we've been able to get these successes, but also to be able to you know, exit them, right? Because exit by itself, it's also a challenge, right? It's also very difficult to sell a company. I mean, okay, like a fraction of people get to unicorns, but even if you don't and you sell a company for like 100 million or like 200 million, it's still a great result, right? If you started early and, you know, and then you can continue and like do another thing, etc. So for us, like, you know, being able to help founders to achieve these exits is also quite important. And that's not like what some of the other investors would be like, you know, capable to do, because they're just different. Some people are more product focused, some people are you know, maybe more passive than us, etc.
Let's just talk, if you can, about chess.com, actually, which was one of your flagship secondary positions. How did that deal come together?
Yeah, so basically, you know, it came in a way as you know, one of the areas that we've been basically exploring more deeply. You know, we like education technologies, we like businesses that help people to grow in their educational you know, development. So originally that was the idea, right? It was more about like education, and it fell into like this broader educational bucket. In our first fund, we've done a number of investments around education, and then in the second fund as well. We are, for example, in a company called Preply in our secondary fund, which is one of the biggest educational platforms globally. We've sold some companies that have been doing, you know, LMS business models, or, you know, courses, different types of courses, like in the early days. Now it's becoming more agentic AI and everything, but like 15 years ago, there was a lot of like trends around that. So we have been in some of those companies. So that's how like chess.com came about, as part of our educational thesis and our research into the niche and segment, trying to understand, okay, who does what. And yeah, and then, you know, it has become a very successful, you know, product company. They've built an outstanding product in chess, and have been able to you know, focus on that and grow it over time. I mean, there is a lot of like content out there, so I wouldn't bore you with detail. It's quite outgoing, and you can like read and how their success has come about. But yeah, in general, again, it was part of our vertical industrial thesis. That's how we most of the time are digging and trying to find good companies in the early stage of investing in our venture growth portfolio. So now we're, for example, digging healthcare quite actively in the US. So if there are healthcare companies out there, we'd really love to meet you and talk to you. Anything that where AI is doing magic and is coming helpful. It's a huge market, very fragmented, lots of data, lots of regulation. So we're looking at companies like that, companies that might be sort of hardware, software, and AI comes into play there as well. Is very interesting. So we're less focused on like deep tech and maybe less focused on the medical technologies per se. We're more focused about how automation can be brought into healthcare, how data can be worked with better, how can you improve things. So this is like where we're spending a lot of our time.
That's very exciting, and I'm looking forward to seeing what you guys get up to. Thank you for
Perfect.
taking the time to talk to me
Perfect.
today.
Thanks a lot. It's my pleasure.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Have a good day. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.